Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll be taking your calls and responding to your email questions. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you today?
I'm feeling great.
Oh, great.
And yourself?
I'm great. I'm
good.
Excited because it's so light out.
Yeah. Isn't that a wonderful thing?
Maybe not for those of us on the East Coast,
uh-huh.
But here in California.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm feeling great, particularly great, because after we talked last week, I came down with a cold,
ooh,
and I spent 2 or 3 days not breathing. I mean, I could breathe enough to stay alive, but not breathing.
Wow.
And, you know, I'm a big fan of breathing. And so now that I'm able to breathe again in the way that I am accustomed to, I'm an even greater fan.
Wow. Sherry, we have a lineup of callers already.
I'm so pleased.
I'd like to welcome George from Pennsylvania. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
How are things with George?
Oh, so I had sort of a series of calls there for a while. I was talking about this bipolar condition that I've had most of my adult life and how it started, the depression part started to sneak up in my dreams, and I noticed that and was able to keep a light of awareness on that, and when I'd wake up and realize where it came from, then I would say, oh, that was a dream, okay, no problem. And even when it started to sneak into the day, awareness certainly helped me, I guess you could say, stave it off or deal with it for quite a while until it finally just seemed to completely flood my consciousness. And I am now in what I would describe as full-blown hell.
Uh-huh.
Identified with the character in the movie most of the time.
In the story.
In the story, right.
Mm-hmm.
In the story, identified.
And the conversation.
Believing, what's that?
The conversation is going on pretty much all the time.
All the time.
Mm-hmm.
All the time. And you know, I'm seeing it, and I'm seeing myself believe it, if awareness. I don't know exactly what's going on. I'm trying to figure it out.
Which is just more of the story, isn't it?
It's just more of the story, right.
And at the same time, you are aware that this is all going on.
Yes, yes.
And what you've described is that kind of the fall into it.
Mm-hmm.
Is, oh, we have a new sound. the fall into it is when you stop, and this kind of has to be in quotes, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
When you stop identifying with awareness that's
mm-hmm.
watching this, and you start identifying
yeah.
more with the person who is having the experience.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep. And that's the essential.
That's
shift that we make into hell.
It's pretty clear that's mm-hmm. that's exactly what took place and what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think you will support me in this, even though it's one of the things that I say that just ticks people off the quickest. The problem actually isn't the depression.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is,
yeah,
being identified with the person in the story and with his hopelessness and helplessness and probably rage that's mm-hmm. also depressed and fear and anxiety and
mm-hmm.
all of those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so all the energy goes there, and mm-hmm. so that's what's center stage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you move into a place ever of feeling compassion for the person who falls into this trap?
Well, there's a couple of things that I notice. And one is I notice that occasionally I can get a blip of being completely out of the theater, completely out of the movie. I mean, just seeing it really totally impersonally, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah.
And in general, I see it a little less personally. It's a little less it's plastered over with ego, I guess.
Well, yeah, and which is a wonderful thing to have happen, right? Because probably an awful lot of people who will listen to this also participate in the news. And on the news, we can see just unbelievably hideous things happening to people. And there's a little blip of, oh, that's awful. But it doesn't begin to compare with whatever issue it is that's going on in our lives. Even though we would quickly admit to anybody who asks us, well, sure, their problems, the problems that they're experiencing right now are way bigger than the problems that I'm experiencing.
Way bigger.
Way bigger. But the reason, of course, they're so compelling for me is that it's me.
Mm-hmm.
So as you say, you know, it's the ego that is the problem.
It's the me making it the center stage, keeping the spotlight on it. You know, and I see it, and it's pretty much on automatic. It seems like almost on automatic pilot. You know, there's not much that I can do about it.
Yes.
There it goes, and you know, it's no less painful than it ever was.
Right.
But
doesn't mean you're not wishing it to be over right now.
What's that?
The fact that you can see it with this level of clarity doesn't mean you wouldn't, if it suddenly went away, you wouldn't feel a loss.
No.
You'd be perfectly fine if it disappeared tomorrow and never came back again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it remains painful. To me, that's a good description of karma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there it is. It's going on. There's really nothing that you can do about it. It's painful. Sometimes you get a moment's respite. Sometimes there's a little period of peace in there. Sometimes you can actually forget about it for a little while. It lifts for a little while, and you feel fine. And for the most part, it's just playing itself out.
Yeah, it's just playing itself out, and it may be there. I mean, I don't feel that I have... I feel... probably, I don't know whether this is the right word or not, less responsible, personally responsible for it.
Right.
You know, it just simply is. And
Rather than a character flaw, it's now more in the realm of a broken leg.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, except a broken leg seems to heal, and this doesn't. And it may never, or it may. You know, I really don't know.
Yeah.
I really don't know. I mean, I've tried everything that I know to do about it, and I've gone to people for help, and I've tried the drugs, I've tried, you know, everything that I can, and I will continue to.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, it looks like, you know, I feel like a 6-foot laboratory rat, you know, like, well, let's see if this will work, or let's try this, or, you know.
Right, and of course...
Meanwhile, the rat, you know, feels terrible and horrible, and it feels like it's dying of anxiety and depression.
Yeah.
That's what's going on.
Right, and, of course, what remains possible and what you have experienced in the past and continue to experience in those moments is that you can cease to identify with that rat, and you can identify with conscious, compassionate awareness that devotes itself to him, not in an ego, personal, poor me, I've got to fix you way, but just in a way of deep compassion.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way that you would understand, any of us would understand, if he were dying of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And so there you are with him, and there's nothing that you can do, but you can be kind and caring and supportive and loving and present as he goes through whatever it is that he goes through. And, of course, you know, the magic of that is that when that happens, when you accomplish that, you, has to be in quotes, you are no longer that laboratory rat experiencing that anxiety and depression. You experience conscious compassion awareness. You experience that unconditional loving mentoring perspective.
And I know that I've experienced that.
Oh yes, a lot.
But I sometimes confuse that, or self-hate comes in and confuses me about whatever, about the difference between kindness and indulgence.
Right. Yeah.
You
well,
know, because the natural thing, you know, there's always a tendency to say, well, I'll have a, you know, I'll have a piece of pie, or I'll do this, or I'll feel a little bit better if I eat this, or that's typical. But that, you know, that kind of thing. I don't think, you know, I think I'll just lie in bed this morning. I won't get up and do my meditation because it feels good lying here. You know, so it's tricky. It's you know,
well,
what is kindness?
That's why I like to compare it to, and so let's put all of our grisly images together. This is a child who has a terminal disease. And what you're going to do is know, as the unconditionally loving caregiver of this child, you're going to educate yourself as to what is the best thing for the child.
Yeah.
You're not going to say, okay, well, then just eating ice cream all day long, because what the heck? Because that wouldn't actually be the way to take care of the child. And nor would pushing the child to do activities when the child is tired. So I like those images because it takes me out of my relationship with me. And you know that because I know about you that you work with young people who have difficulties. And so you're looking at that all the time. What is kind and compassionate yet not sliding over into indulgent? And so, you know, generally speaking, of course, it's only self-hate that worries about indulging. It generally, any time you go in a direction of doing something kind for yourself, it's going to call it indulgent. So it's really great that you've caught on to lying in bed is indulgent, because that's the kind of thing that actually the voices would probably never draw to your attention.
I'm going through an interesting struggle in regard to indulgence and kindness now, because the job that you were speaking of, working with the young kids, has changed fairly dramatically to the point where most of the houses are now locked down. Most of the kids are of a much more difficult to work with, and I have really lost my heart for the job. And I'm, you know, being 63, going almost 64, I'm thinking, I actually called my supervisor today and said that that I've just, you know, I've got to walk away from it at this point. And so now, so of course self-hate comes right in and says, you know, you have to go, no matter how terrible it feels, no matter how miserable you may feel, you have to go there and you have to do that job, even though you don't at all want to do it, and there's all kinds of problems and so on. You need to be there.
I know the answer. Isn't it? It's always so easy when it's somebody else's life, you know. So it is interesting that it's kind of a parallel, because in the same way that you don't want to do the job, you also, in large part, don't want to live this guy's life. So that's just kind of interesting that they arise at the same time. But the solution from my perspective, is go find work that you love as much as you have loved this job before it changed.
Mm-hmm.
It, the two choices are not do something you hate or do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can find other people to interact with in that way that helps you remember to come from conscious compassion awareness. There are just tons and tons and tons of people out there who are looking for conscious compassionate awareness in a body that they can recognize.
Mm-hmm.
So no end to the opportunities for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's true.
Okay, well,
okay.
Keep us posted, huh?
Thank you. Yes,
care,
I will
George.
Do that.
Okay, take care.
All right. Thank
Good
you,
night.
Sherry.
Thanks for joining us, George. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Catherine from St. Louis. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Sherry.
Good evening.
I'm calling to report back on the 10 things I want to do before I die. Do you remember that conversation?
I do remember that conversation.
Okay. I came up with 10 things to do this year, actually.
Oh.
And
that's always a good plan as we get older.
Right. I mean, who knows?
That's right. Of course, who knows any time, but, you know, the statistics are, you know, become less in our favor with every passing year. So this is a good thing. 10 things this year.
Right.
All right.
And then 3 things to do maybe more long term.
Uh-huh.
So, and what I noticed is, as I was doing it, well, different parts of me want kind of different things maybe.
Oh, I bet.
And I got really excited about the idea that I could actually do what I want. And then, of course, self-hate really ratcheted up.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but here's the good news. Self-hate is trying to ruin your life, whatever you do.
Right.
So you might as well do something that you enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like if you're not doing what you want with your life, it leaves you alone.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's
so
true.
If it's going to beat you up anyway, let it beat you up while you're having fun.
Right.
So you want to tell us some of those things?
Sure. One was finish the backyard wildlife habitat. I've started it, and now I want to finish it, and I want to put in a walking meditation path.
Oh, wonderful.
And I want to have a workshop with a monk in St. Louis.
You know, you could combine those and do a retreat day at some point. Then you get a bunch of meditators to come over and do working meditation on the wildlife habitat.
Oh, I had some of that. And I did, some of the things I noticed are rather concrete. Attend at least 2 retreats, teach myself cooking or take a class, kinds of things that I can measure. And one was have fun. And I had to write that I really don't know yet what that looks like.
Yeah.
But it feels like I don't have fun much.
Right. And do you suspect that there's a repressed fun person inside there?
I think there's somebody who definitely wants to play and really doesn't ever get to.
Yeah. So do you feel like you have some techniques that you can use to get in touch with that person?
Yeah, I just thought of one when you asked that.
Okay.
The writing it out with the left hand.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And the non-dominant hand.
Yeah, so you're right-handed?
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah, so with the right hand, you might say something like, who wants to play? And then put the pen in the other hand and just see who talks to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, another fun technique is to go through magazines, and I mean, you go to the library if you're not a magazine person, but just stand at a magazine rack and just look through magazines and see what looks like fun. See what you kind of spark to.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and then, so what are they doing? Where are they? What does that, you know, and then, because somebody is responding, right?
Right?
So that's a way to be in touch with whoever that person is.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And again, you know, you can have a whole range of things, right? Because play or fun could be anything from from drawing and coloring to games to singing to walking outside to doing your project in the backyard to
right.
taking a vacation on a long white Caribbean beach or you know so.
Do you think it's an attitude more than?
I do.
And then okay, yeah, because I've had fun working in the backyard.
Yes, and I'll tell you how I know that immediately. This is not even a theory. This past week, I have had so much fun. And, you know, what I've been doing is resting up and taking care of a cold.
Mm.
So a lot of it was spent in bed. And within that, you know, the weather was beautiful. I love being home. I'm there, you know, in an environment that I love. And I'm still able to do things that feel good and important to me. And the thing that kept coming to me was, I'm having such a good time. I love this. This is so much fun.
Hmm.
And then I would think, but you have a cold. That's not supposed to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it was.
So it sounds like some gratitude and taking care of oneself.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just the, you know, one of the things that I did was make a poster for my best year yet.
Oh.
You know, and I get out all my, you know, bright colors and big paper and sit there and do that, and it's very restful and have a box of Kleenex, and it's fun. So I think you're right. I think it's the attitude. The attitude is far, because we all know that. You know, you go someplace wonderful and hate it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You're doing nothing, and it's a really good time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things on my list was being more social, and some part of me really wants more a friend or a couple of friends, close friends.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I'm thinking I need to be my own best friend.
Yeah, well,
I get real confused about
those two things aren't separate. I think truly you're entering into an aspects of the personality workshop.
Okay.
Because I would guess that there are parts of you who would really like a friend or friends, and there are other parts who have no interest whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And those parts who have no interest may not be interested in being a friend to you either. So it's finding out, you know, it's who's who, and then what meets the needs of that part of you.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be doing something social once a month. Or, you know, participate. Could be, you know, you take your cooking class and you take advantage of that time to meet other people and just see what that's like. Or you know, whatever it is, wherever you are, and then do it as a workshop.
Uh-huh.
You know, what arises? If at this point in life you don't have those relationships, something kept them from happening.
Mm-hmm.
So then that, of course, is going to come up and you'll get to watch that. And see how that works, and untangle that bit of karma. And
okay, it sounds.
And take care of yourself throughout the whole thing. So it's all good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So now you're going to check in periodically, right?
Right. I was wondering about, you know, I made the list, and then I really haven't done much on it.
Well,
so
the thing that I love about this best year yet process that I keep talking to people about. Is the accountability factor. So, you know, a lot of these kinds of things we do. You know, I make my list, or I make my resolutions, or all of those kinds of things. And then who follows up to see, and then I get to the end of the year and I'm just disappointed again.
Right.
So we can be the accountability for you.
Oh, okay.
You can, you know, you go through your list and, so, you know, you want to check in regularly. Okay, what am I doing toward that goal? And, what you know, I better make those reservations for that retreat. And, okay, what am I doing to make sure that that happens? And then periodically, give us a call.
Okay.
And tell us how you're doing.
Do you recommend a certain time period or just whenever?
Just, I for myself, I like this kind of stuff. So I work on it on a weekly basis.
Okay.
You know, just little steps. Okay, what do I want to do? What am I going to do this week for this? Okay, well, you know, I haven't done these kind of measurable things, so I'm going to call or go online and find out what cooking classes are available around here.
Okay.
Good. There's a step toward achieving that one.
Okay, and then call in every 6 weeks or so?
Yeah, whatever feels right, just so you know somebody else is in this with you.
Okay, great. That'll help.
Good.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Catherine. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with you in a couple of minutes. Coming up next on Open Air, in our second half of today's show, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious, compassionate awareness and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, the phones are still ringing here.
Good.
I'd like to welcome Jeffrey from Philadelphia. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Jeffrey.
Hello, Sherry.
How are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. And yourself?
Good. What's going on in your neck of the woods?
We are bitterly cold out here on the East Coast.
Ah, well, it's about time, isn't it?
I don't know if it's ever the most welcome thing, but yeah, I'm here for it.
All right. And how about for Jeffrey?
For Jeffrey, I wanted to call and share a gratitude that I've been having lately, because for the past few months, I've been looking at lots of existential stuff, like why questions.
Hmm.
And I realized recently that it's a process, and what I was actually doing was buying into ego's view of life.
Aha. Uh-huh. Because, can you give an example of one of the why questions that were being...
Why are we here? What are we supposed to be doing?
Oh, I see. Yes, really.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, existential.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so you began to suspect that this might be somebody's way of keeping you occupied somewhere other than where you are.
Yeah. Well, not just keeping me occupied, but just ruining any sort of good time.
Yeah. And serving no purpose other than that. Just take you up into your conditioned mind to ruminate about these things for a while, until perhaps you're depressed, and then go on to the next depressing question that has no answer.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
And I realized a week or so ago that I have no idea what the answers are.
Right. And really, to me, of course, it's just such a big who cares. Because if I'm noodling about why I'm here, and I happen to notice, as you have, that the net result of this is I'm not here, you know, then maybe a better thing to be focused on is, how do I get here? Because maybe once I'm here, I'll realize what the answer to that question is.
Yeah. I have a sense that maybe once I'm here, it won't matter anyway.
Well, yes, there is that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That seems to be my experience anyway.
Yeah, yeah. And yet, you also do know. In the sense that this is enough. You know, people are always talking to me about things like purpose. You know, what am I really here for? I mean, what is, you know, I feel like I'm lacking passion because, you know, I don't know what my real purpose in life is. And I'm always fascinated that being alive doesn't seem to be enough. And what's happening for the person, of course, is that they're busy noodling this, what is my true purpose, so they're actually not alive. They're not living. And so when you're not living, then you're looking for some way, you know, your easy prey for conditioned mind to say, well, but, you know, if you knew the answer to this, then you would be happy. And, of course, what you've caught on to is, if I stopped thinking about this, I'd be happy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's wonderfully simple.
It really is, isn't it? And, in fact, at this point, people often say to me, but it can't be that simple. And then, you know, the only response we can have is, why? Why can't it? What if it is?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What if it's okay to just
Yeah. What,
okay?
What if this is it?
Yeah.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Yeah.
I was just pondering.
Yes, well, there was a big noise, so I thought maybe you had gone away.
Oh, no.
Good, okay. I thought it was one of those cosmic things.
I certainly hope not.
Yeah, so it's a good thing to realize, isn't it? That when we find ourselves caught up in that, and especially the part that you tied together, that what this does is ruin my good time, then you can just find yourself headed down that little avenue and say, oh, no, I've been here before. I know where this goes. I'm gonna get back here. I'm going to get into life and feel what that feels like.
Yeah, the alleyway is very familiar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One of the things I like to do is performs. And when I'm doing that or rehearsing or engaged in that, it's just everything is fine. But if we go down that other place, it's not enough and not doing it the right way, and you should be, there are all kinds of stuff that goes with that.
Yes. Yes. So whether you are performing in a way of being someone else or something else somewhere else, or whether you are performing as Jeffrey in this incarnation, when you are really where you are, life is good.
Yeah. Well, I found that's the only, I'm projecting, of course, but that's the kind of performance that I like, is people who are really, really here.
Yes. Yeah. People leave the present moment to try to solve problems, but the problems only exist because they're not in the moment. When we can make it back to here, all of the problems dissolve. And what we find is what you started out with, gratitude. Gratitude. Just to be alive. Just to be here and be able to experience the wonder of being a human being alive. It's plenty. I can't imagine a higher purpose.
Yes. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Good to talk with you.
Thanks.
Good night. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jeffrey. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, your conversation reminded me of a quote that I really love. Can I share it with you?
Please.
Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do it. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive.
Yes. Is that Howard Thurman?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it just gives me the tingles just saying it.
Yeah.
So exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Because everybody wants to be important. right? And when we're operating out of ego, that's what we want. We want to be special. We want to be important. We want to be somebody. What the world really responds to is just anybody, anywhere, doing whatever they're doing wholeheartedly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Makes us all glad to be alive.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Wonderful. And we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Grigsby from Northern Virginia. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening. I'm hearing some really great things tonight on the program.
Uh-huh.
You know, I have to say, I really love the teachings as I hear it from you. It just, it amazes me. And it goes beyond my rational ability to understand things.
Yes. I think it goes beyond that ability for all of us.
Yeah.
The teachings are, it's like, well, I don't know if this is true, but this is what just occurred to me. It's kind of like a drum beat that reminds us of our own heartbeat.
Hmm. That's a great image.
Yeah. So do we understand it? No. And yet it's so deep and fundamental and intimate that everything in us responds to it.
You know, I think maybe that's why there's an element of what I call faith involved.
Yes.
I have the kind of mind that's always wanted to understand something before I did it, and now I have to experience it and then let the understanding come. But it takes a certain faith.
Yes, it does.
I think.
Yes, it does. And for me, the great part about what you're pointing at is that the first few times, it really takes faith.
Yeah.
Because you're not so sure it's going to work out that way.
Right.
But after a while, it kind of slides out of faith and into trust.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you've done it often enough that you know. If you get to a certain place, you go ahead and step into it, you have that experience, understanding is going to follow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that gives me hope, that understanding that you just put in those words.
Yeah.
The issue that I wanted to call in about has to do with being able to take action and make some decisions.
Uh-huh.
And I've been thinking about the words, letting life live through you. And that's one of those quotes that my mind can't really wrap itself around or understand.
That's right.
And so my mind wants to figure out what to do.
Yes.
And I identify a lot with Catherine, who spoke earlier, in terms of where we are in our lives, where it's time to do certain things that I've put off and to make decisions that put me more towards really feeling alive.
Mm-hmm.
And what you told her about accountability, that really struck a chord with me. I haven't really understood how to use accountability or to work that in. Because in the past, I guess, accountability has meant setting up goals and setting myself up for punishment.
Yes.
And now I'm starting to see that, but I'm not really sure how to move forward.
Yeah. Well, and to me, our practice is a form of accountability in the sense of a compassionate mirror.
Okay.
So, and for people who, you know, are attracted to this, best year yet thing that I'm always talking about, I'm not sure what's on it, on our website about it, but if people want to contact Michael or probably the show, we can give you more direct information about it. But the thing about it is that, you know, you're moving along in your practice, and you see, you've just described very clearly how you started out, what you've seen, where that takes you, where you are now.
Mm-hmm.
And so trusting that process is really, it's really the whole deal. It's just taking step after step after step after step. Now, to me, that's one of the things that's so remarkable about our practice, that it's true. What we're conditioned toward is somebody, conditioning, sets a standard, and then you don't meet it, and you get a beating.
Right.
That's kind of the, in anything, you know, it's called personal growth, it's called religion, it's called, excellence or whatever it is. But it's just self-hatred, we know that.
Yeah.
So how do we then move from that kind of punishing place into this whole mentoring? Where I was reading something recently, and somebody used the term self-love, and I've said very clearly, I think the term self-love is just the creepiest thing I've ever heard in my life, because to me, what that is, and I think it is what it is. It's not, you know, it's not semantics, and I'm not misunderstanding. What it usually means is the ego is loving the ego,
mm-hmm.
and that's creepy. What practice offers us is moving into a place of conscious, compassionate awareness and having compassion for the person, the human. Okay? So not, in your case, not taking him personally, not blaming him, not holding him to standards, not beating him up, not anything, just realizing, which we can see from center, from conscious compassion and awareness, see that, hey, he's a good guy. You know, he's trying. He's moving along the path to enlightenment. Let's help him. Let's support him. Let's give him a break instead of what conditioning wants to do, which is, you know, suck the life out of you through finding out what's wrong and loss, lack, deprivation, fear, all of that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So constantly moving forward with that, taking that, you know, you put that foot down, take that next step, and what you're building is that relationship with conscious, compassionate awareness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, you know, every day you're trying to be as centered and present and here as you can be. And then you see what you see. And what you're learning to do is get a sense of where you are through the information that you're getting. So, you know, when you start getting a beating, you know that you slipped into a relationship with self-hatred, right?
Right.
When you do something and there may be a sense of disappointment or sadness or that kind of thing, but what you get with it is a feeling of clarity or kind of an understanding or, you know, that kindness, compassion, sympathy, mm-hmm. you can be pretty sure that you're somewhere pretty close to center.
Mm. Yeah. Well, that's really helpful.
Yeah.
You know what I find helps me also? It's finding a way to give to other people something of what I'm getting.
Yes.
It makes it a lot more real.
Yes. Yes. And it not particularly helpful to try to explain it to them, right? So that they'll understand it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, because they don't understand it, you don't understand it. Pretty soon you wind up in this place of, I don't know what I'm talking about, and it's all kind of depressing.
Yeah.
But if you're with people and you are attempting to be as centered as you can, they can feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the, you know, back to the quote that Michael just gave us. You know, when you feel kind of lit up by your own life, present in where you are, and excited about what you're seeing, other people feel that, and they want to know about it.
Right.
Yeah. That's the place where I always encourage people to tell them way less than you feel inclined to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just say, well, you know, here's a book, or So maybe why don't you go to this retreat?
Right. Yeah, I've usually done it the other way around.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we do. You know, it, because anytime we're excited about something, we want to share it.
Right.
It's just that very often that's an easy way for conditioning to come in and take away from us, you know, the good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, you know, really interesting.
Yeah. So if you think about it, you know, you didn't come to this by somebody explaining it to you.
No. Nope.
You had your own experience, and the understanding followed.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Well, this has really been helpful.
Good.
I'm glad it's. I can listen to it again, too.
It's very helpful, isn't it, to be able to go back and listen to it again?
Yep.
Yeah. Because probably somebody else will listen. If you listened again, somebody else would listen. And pretty soon the whole team has a sense of what happened.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Yep. All right. Thanks, Grigsby.
Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Grigsby. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Susan from California. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello.
Good evening.
Hi. While I was waiting, I just happened to see this quote, and I thought I would read it before I ask my question.
Uh-huh.
It's by someone, the spelling is B-A-P-U-J-I,
uh-huh.
And it says, "My beloved child, break your heart no longer. Each time you judge yourself, you break your own heart."
Boy, isn't that the truth?
Wow. It's such a gentle way of saying something so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
My question is about whether we hear I or you inside our heads.
Yes.
And what I see is probably in the last month, I'm getting a lot more I's than you. And with you, when the voices say you, I can really feel pretty objective to it because it's someone speaking at me or to me.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's I, I'm feeling, it makes me feel much worse. And it's harder. I mean, I seem to take it on.
Yes.
So,
because you're identified, right? You identify.
That is the part. The point of my question. I don't quite understand how I can get to that similar place as with you.
Okay. Well, and you know, it is similar. Similar is a good word, but let's just stick with that. So what kind of thing might the I voice say to you?
I really made this mistake. I made a bad decision years ago, and because of that, ha, 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 now.
Okay. Oh, this is so classic. People all over the world are going, oh, yeah, I know that one. Okay. So I made a mistake, and yeah, and so here I am,
mm-hmm.
and whether it's said or not, what we know is my life is a mess,
mm-hmm.
and it's my fault, and
yes.
If I had done something different, okay. So imagine, if you will, that this is your sister,
okay.
or your best friend,
mm-hmm.
or your niece, or whoever in your life do you have somebody like that you really care about?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So picture her, whoever that is, saying that. You know?
Okay.
Yeah, here I'll be her. Okay? You know, I made this mistake, and because of that, my life is like this. You know, it's a mess, and it's my fault. What are you going to say?
I'm afraid I'm not going to say the most compassionate thing.
So now I'm your best friend. I'm your sister. You love me unconditionally.
Well, I would probably say you're just being way too hard on yourself.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's true, right? Now, here are some additional things to consider in this.
Okay.
Number one, the person who is talking is not the person who did whatever.
Oh. Okay.
And you want to be really, really careful. Now, the fact that you're seeing this tells me I can tell you this, okay?
Yeah.
You want to be really careful because this may not be a real subpersonality or aspect of the personality.
Okay? I've wondered about that.
That's right. This could be good old self-hate, putting on a shawl and curling up on the sofa with a cup of hot chocolate, ready to ruin your life. Okay?
Okay.
So here's when we were talking earlier about moving into that mentoring role.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you just did when you looked at this person as somebody else. So there she is. There's Susan. Is she a decent human being?
I think so.
Yeah. She tries hard.
Yeah.
She worries about stuff. She tries to be the best person she can be. She kind of agonizes about mistakes. She wishes she could be better.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. She's like the rest of us. She is a sympathetic character, okay? She's a human being.
Right.
Years ago, before she knew any better, she made a decision. Now, she actually didn't, but that's the way we like to talk about it. So life circumstances happened, and out of whatever, ignorance, karma, clouded thinking, the best perspective she could gain at the time, she did something.
Right.
Okay?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's it. If she had known then what she knows now, she'd have done something different.
Well, that's just the point I come up to, though, is I can't be forgiving.
Then you are dealing with self-hate.
Uh-huh.
Because who besides self-hate would ever want to do that to somebody?
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine that your best friend, your sister, your whoever it is, you know, your mother, your whoever, that you would say, no, you cannot be forgiven?
No, I can't imagine that.
You did this thing, and you can never be forgiven. Well, it's unthinkable.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, it is.
Yeah. So this is very good. It's very clarifying. It's self-hatred. Ditch it.
Mm-hmm.
Never have the conversation again. Go back and have a little conversation with that person who was there, woman, young woman, girl, whoever it was. Have a little conversation with her and say something along the lines of, I really appreciate what you did.
Uh-huh.
I appreciate all I've learned as a result of it. I know it was really hard. It was a hard time. I wish I could have been there with you. Mm. I wish I could have helped you.
Oh, okay.
You're heroic for having survived. Excellent job. Thank you. And never indulge that other conversation again.
That sounds very good.
It is very good. Here's the other piece of it. Okay. You can do it.
Uh-huh.
It'll be a struggle.
Yes.
Because that level of self-hatred is not going to want to turn loose of you lightly.
Right, right.
But you can extricate yourself. And again, I hope it is helpful for other people. It's so helpful for me to think of it as somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, here is this person looking at you with those great big eyes, and the only thing you can say is, don't ever think of it again.
Uh-huh.
It's over. It's past. If you could do something about it, you would. You can't. Let it go. Forget it. Let's go have an ice cream.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've taken me to a good place with this.
Good.
I will have one more quick question if there's time around this.
Let's check with Michael.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Something you said. You talked about knowing whether or not it was a subpersonality, which I take to mean that is a true part of myself.
That's
versus
right.
the other.
That's right. How old were you when this event happened?
It was about, 20 years ago.
Okay. So it is true, I would say, that there is a part of you who is probably still in some level of distress about whatever happened.
Yes.
Probably several parts of you.
Uh-huh.
They are waiting to be embraced, understood. That's, you know, that's who I was talking to.
Okay.
Yeah, encouraging you to talk to. Self-hatred wants to stay outside of anything resembling embracing or forgiveness.
Right.
Yeah.
That I understand.
Yeah. So when you reach out a hand to somebody, you know, there's a lonely little girl or there's a frightened whatever, and your hand gets bitten.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That's not a legitimate part of you.
Okay. That's
yeah.
clear.
Okay, good.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for calling.
Okay,
take
bye.
Care. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Susan. You've been listening to another great hour of Open Air with Sherry Huber. Thank you, Sherry. I enjoyed that.
Thank you, Michael. I enjoyed it, too.
See you
next week.
Good night.
Good night.